Welcome to Oh, I Like That, a podcast about things we like and occasionally things we don't. I'm Rachel Wilkerson Miller.
And I'm Sally Tamarkin. Rachel.
Sally.
I think all I can really say, which I'll address in our vibe track, is that it's a Monday for us.
It's a real Monday. Mm-hmm.
And it's feeling more Monday-ish than other Mondays have felt for me.
It is. It's not necessarily in a bad way. I'm not having like a bad one. I think it's tough because we're coming off a really beautiful weekend weather-wise. And I don't know if you saw, but like all of Brooklyn was awakened this morning by the loudest thunderclap. Like that's what woke everyone up around 6 a.m. today.
I was wondering if that happened to you as well.
It did indeed. And like there were big flashes of thunder. It was just, again, like not the way you want, or big flashes of lightning, not thunder. That's the Monday in work. But it's not the way you want to wake up on a Monday morning or ever really. So I think that's contributing to, like, it's very, very gloomy. And I think that's contributing to the Monday vibe.
I don't know about you, but like in 2022, when I hear a loud noise, perhaps in like the 90s, if I was woken by a loud noise, I would be like, oh, there's like a weather event. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, my mind goes to like just only the most frightening things.
Absolutely. Don't even get me started on people who like scream in public. Like they're having a good time with their friends. And so they let out a scream. And I'm like, you can't do that. You cannot do that. Absolutely not.
Screaming is outlawed unless you're in like severe peril.
Yes, like especially not in the New York City subway. What are you? We live in a society.
No. Please, we do.
No screams. Nothing warrants it.
No, nothing. I just want to say about my Monday that I always feel kind of connected to my New York friends when I see that you all experience the same, you know, thing, like the sound that woke you all up this morning. I experienced not a loud clap of thunder, but rain that was coming down so heavily that I thought like something was wrong. I don't even know what I thought was wrong. I was just like, rain isn't supposed to come down this hard.
Yeah.
And I had just been woken up by Manny, the kitten. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's not a kitten. He has no excuse. He's old enough to not be, he's almost not a kitten, but he woke me up and I was up and about. And then I heard this like just super loud rain. And I was like, that's just not right. Like, you know what I mean? Like this is how, and maybe my mind is on this because of the topic of today's show, but like this is how dystopian thrillers start, with like rain that feels this otherworldly. So all that is to say, also, I'm having an email problem that I spent an hour trying to solve, and I'm convinced that I'm being punked by the universe because it seems to have no, it's like, it's a minor annoyance, but it's like, it's enough of an annoyance that I invested a lot of time in trying to solve it. And nothing is working. I cannot get emails to show up unless I search for them just from this one sender. Like a chump, I spent like 45 minutes trying to solve the problem. And that's I would say the biggest reason today feels so Monday-ish to me is that I invested all this time in solving a problem and in the end, it remains unsolved.
That's a really good way of putting like a Monday vibe. That's what it is. It's just it's like unforeseen problems that shouldn't have really happened and then are harder to solve than they ever should have been.
And they're not even like, they're not even that bad. So you can't have like a cathartic like cry over them or it's just, you know, it's just this sort of moderate level of frustration. Mm-hmm. So, but Rachel, that's, I feel like I've dominated with my Monday. I'm just sort of infusing our shared vibe with my Monday vibe. But what else is the vibe for you?
So my vibe is still spring. And after yesterday, the vibe is spring cleaning, which it's that time of year again. And I haven't been doing very much of it. And I want to be clear that I didn't do like enough of it to totally brag about. Like I didn't go deep. However, I did some, and particularly cleaned our bedroom, which like just needed, like it was like dusty, it just was getting really dusty, and like just took care of laundry, and just it, like the payoff from an hour or two of cleaning was and is so significant that I feel so great. Like that actually I think has counterbalanced the storm, the Monday of it all, because yes, I was woken by this horrible thunderclap, but it was in clean sheets and in a clean bedroom. Mm. And I think that is going a long way. So spring cleaning is really pretty good for the soul.
That's great. I was just thinking about how much better I would feel after my frustrating afternoon if I like did one cleaning project today, and I can tell you already, I'm definitely not going to do it, but because it's like the late afternoon, and I stopped being productive at like at 2 p.m. My productivity just starts to sort of like slide downward. Mm-hmm. But like it would go a long way if I vacuumed, which I shan't.
Oh, well, like, yeah, it would help, but you know what? Not gonna lay and scroll. Yep, I get
and
that,
and sometimes that's fine.
Yep.
Okay, housekeeping. We're doing an AMA episode. Mm-hmm. You should write to us at ohilikethatpod@gmail.com and ask us anything. Thank you to the folks that have written in. Please continue to do that. Please also write in for if you want to what you think. Oh, I like that listener should be called. I got one piece of positive feedback for Likeheads, I think, is the one that they liked. And I feel like that does have, that one has legs, but like I'm open to anything.
Yeah, we need to hear from the people on this one. We shan't name them. They should name them themselves.
Totally. That's how you know you've made it, is when the people who listen come up with a name for their community. So sound off, Like Hive.
So our main segment today is actually inspired by the end of our last episode when Sally recommended Severance, and we talked about it briefly then. I ended up watching it immediately the following week after we recorded. It's not that – like it's one season. It's not that long, so got through it very quickly. Loved it, was immediately into it. And so we're going to talk about that as well as some other Severance-ish media. So like if you liked Severance, you might also like this. And I guess the flip of that is like if you like these things, you might also like Severance. So we're going to talk about it spoiler-free to start, just to share what we liked about it, to kind of sell you on watching if you haven't already. But then we will let you guys know when it's time to tune out if you don't want anything spoiled for you, which I do recommend. I think going into it knowing nothing was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm really excited that you liked it so much. We had to repair a small rift in our friendship when you were like, how could you not have recommended this? And we didn't really have to repair a rift, but I was like, how could I not have recommended it?
I feel really shocked by it because, and I think I may have said this when we were recording, but like this is extremely my shit. Like this is the exact kind of sci-fi that I'm into. And so the fact that you didn't tell me about it sooner, especially because you liked it so much, I was shocked, but better late than never.
I know. I blew it. I don't know what was going on with me, but we're going to I'm making up for all of that by talking about it at length with the Ohive.
Exactly. Okay. So Sally, do you want to kick us off by reading the official show summary?
Yes. Okay. So here's what Severance is. First of all, it's on Apple TV Plus. Mm-hmm. The plot follows Mark, who's played by Adam Scott, an employee of Lumen Industries, who agrees to a severance program in which his non-work memories are separated from his work memories. Well, that's the Wikipedia summary of the show. Mm-hmm. And then, Rachel, how would you describe it genre-wise? Because I feel like it's doing a couple different things.
It is. I don't know if I know enough about genres to like accurately describe it. You compared it to Black Mirror, and I think that's a pretty good comparison. And I think we're going to talk about this more later, but there's like, I would compare it to specific episodes of Black Mirror because it has like a softer side to it. So it's not just like dystopian workplace. It's about other more emotional things. It's about like grief and processing things and like it just has like such a softer edge to it than just simply being like a weird puzzle box. And I think that's what makes it so great. So yeah, I think that's how I would describe the genre. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's interesting because like I think that when we were recording last time, I think you said, you were like, oh, is it like a Black Mirror vibe? And I was like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. that's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't put that together. Now it's so obvious. And if you start reading stuff about Severance, everyone talks about Black Mirror. Mm. As something it's similar to. I think the reason that I didn't put that together is because the show is doing so much mm-hmm. in a good way that it didn't immediately occur to me. I mean, it almost like it sometimes has the aesthetics of like Mad Men
yes.
in the sense that it's like, first of all, visually like incredibly rich and interesting, sometimes beautiful, sometimes mm-hmm. kind of brutalist. Mm-hmm. But one of my favorite things about Mad Men is how how much you're getting about the character's like interiority. Like there's a lot of things that no one says, but is happening. And you get a lot of that with the show, especially with the main character, Mark. It also, you know, it has a very, it's like not totally clear if it's a dystopian story. It seems like it might be, but like you said, Rachel, it's a puzzle box. And so it's one of these shows where you don't really know what's going on, and you're sort of learning about the world as the show unfolds. And it's a world that is like ours in some very recognizable ways, but also very unlike ours in some very uncanny ways, which is kind of its own genre to me also. You know, that that's kind of a thing that I think is in some of my favorite episodes of Black Mirror, where you're like, oh, this is exactly like our world, except for just this one giant dystopian thing.
I think I agree with so much of what you just said. I want to put a pin in the visual style, because I think that that is a huge part of what's so appealing about it. Like, it is so stylish. And Mad Men definitely came to mind for me, but I think it's also, they do a really expert job of making it a little bit devoid of time and place. So I think I think it is set in the modern era, but it brings in, like, there's a mid-century feel, there's a 70s feel, there's an 80s feel. Like, it has all these different little bits, and it's like, it's, it could be the United States, but it's also like could be Canada or just kind of anywhere English speaking. Like, it just feels just vague enough to be really, really appealing. I also wanted to mention the puzzle box aspect of it, which I think what I like about this show is that it's not an annoying puzzle box, if that makes sense. Like, it, it, you get a lot of answers quickly, like particularly by the end of the first episode, you will know a ton about what is going on. And the, there are mysteries throughout, but they feel earned. Like, it doesn't feel like they're wasting your time, and it's, and you get payoff multiple times throughout, which I think I can't stand puzzle box shows where it feels like they're needlessly trying to confuse you or misdirect, or like they just won't reveal things that it's just like, just tell me this. This isn't that deep. And it feels really, it, it feels like the show constantly is trying to like outwit you and be smarter than you. And this is doing it in a way that just feels like very earned, very authentic. Like, it's a tantalizing mystery, but again, you do get answers both immediately and then throughout and at the end of the season that make it worth it. Not every single thing has been answered. It's been renewed for a season two, but I think that if you don't typically like puzzle box shows, but because you've been burned by like Westworld or whatever,
or Lost,
I still think this is worth your time. It's to me, it's like so much better. And I think ultimately the show is so well paced. That was one of my like biggest takeaways, which is not normally how I would describe a TV show, but so many things are like the wrong size for the container they're in. It's like, this TV show maybe should have just been a movie. This movie should have been multiple episodes of a TV show, or maybe this like three season show could have been a six episode miniseries. And this is one of the rare shows that I feel like actually fits the size of the container that it's in. And they just, there's really not a lot of filler. They keep it moving, because I have very little patience for just draggy puzzle box shows. And this is not like that.
Yeah, I agree. A friend of mine I was texting with, we talk about TV a lot. And he was like, I just started Severance. I was really wary of it because I got burned by Lost. And I'm like really nervous about how this is going to end, even though I really like it so far. And I was like, you know, this, first of all, I think the finale of the of season one is really satisfying in a lot of ways, but also while raising a bunch of new questions and leaving some unanswered, but not so many that you turn off the TV and you're like, well, what the fuck even was that? And like, why am I bothering? This is kind of the first time I think that I've watched something and understood what people have meant when they've said that is so well paced. Like, I feel like that's an observation people make. And I'm like, but what is, I don't know. I don't ever know what that means. But you're right. It's the right size for the container. And it's also, it kind of feels like the mysteries are being revealed to you in service of being told a story and learning more about the characters, as opposed to the kind of puzzling, mysterious aspects being their own thing that, you know, like you said, Rachel, there are some puzzle box shows where you sort of feel, it almost feels like the creator of the show is trying to like get one over on you or something, yes, or like trick you or something. And it really doesn't feel like that at all. And in fact, like, we could talk about this more when we get into the spoilery territory, but I think that like people who watch this show feel connected to the characters, because it really is about these people and what they're going through. And as you get to know them, I think also anyone who's worked, I was going to say in an office, but I think kind of anywhere, can sort of relate to what it's like to be in this weird little universe that's just you and your coworkers. Mm-hmm. There's just like a lot to grab onto with this show.
I think that thinking about the type of puzzle box it is, I would maybe compare it to the first season of Russian Doll, which like it's not tonally similar. Like Russian Doll is like very like it's Natasha Lyonne. Like that's the energy mm-hmm. of Russian Doll. But I think that I think a lot of people who watched that first season, it felt like I don't necessarily care about what the big mystery is because this is so compelling and I just like these characters so much and it's dramatic, but it's funny and it's interesting. And like that's how this show feels too. Like you'll care about, I think, the mystery a bit more than you would with Russian Doll. But I do think it feels similarly like this is a character study and this is pushing that forward. But it is also still a great story. It's really compelling. And so you do just want to know, like the reveals mm-hmm. keep you going and keep you really hooked. So I think the other thing too I wanted to mention is that I think with dystopian stuff, a lot of times people have the question of like, is it going to be scary? Like, am I going to be stressed out? And I don't think so. I think that the most stressful episode was the season finale. And that was more suspenseful. And like, again, it's the finale. It feels worth it once you get there and you like, you know what's happening. You're like, oh my God, you know, you're going to be on the edge of your seat. But the rest of it, like, I don't know. I don't like watching a show where I feel like somebody's going to get killed at any second, or it's going to be, there's going to be jump scares, or it's just going to feel, I don't know, some dystopian things are putting us in really dark futures where I'm just like on edge the whole time. And I don't think that's how this was. And so if that's something that you like generally feel stressed out by, I think this might still be worth watching the first episode because my experience was that it's not what I would call scary.
Yeah, I agree. And I identify as an absolute scaredy cat. And I don't find this scary. And I think it kind of shares a quality with some of the Black Mirror episodes that we'll talk about later, which is that mm-hmm. it can get dark.
Yeah.
But it's a darkness in a – it's not – sometimes dystopian stories are – dystopian because it's a world without hope. Like if you've read 1984, it's like mm-hmm. very, that reality, the despair is so endless and so oppressive and there's no way out of it. Mm-hmm. This does not have that. It's like much more similar to some episodes of Black Mirror where there is, the show is about the humanity of these people mm-hmm. in this situation mm-hmm. and finding hope in it. And actually kind of quasi-related, I would say your Russian Doll comparison is a really good one. One thing I think it shares in common with Russian Doll is that you kind of want more of the characters. Like, I mean, Natasha Lyonne has a magnetism like no one else.
For sure.
Like in the known universe. But like, so, you know, when Adam Scott or Zach Cherry or Britt Lower, when they're on screen or the actor who plays Mr. Milchick, you're just like, please mm-hmm. give me more of that.
Yeah.
But then the other thing I was going to say is puzzle box wise, one of the reasons I think it's so not alienating and mm-hmm. really pulls you into it in a way that's like, come on, join us on this, is because like Russian Doll, the characters are figuring out their situation along with you. So mm-hmm. it's not like one of those shows that where you're dropped into a world and you're just trying to keep up and figure it
out. So true. Yeah.
You know, it's like the, mm-hmm. you know, this is not spoilery. It's in the show description, but like mm-hmm. one of the things that's happening is happening in the show is that the main character is kind of figuring out what's going on mm-hmm. and you're doing that along with him. And I think that that mm-hmm. kind of pulls you in a way.
I think that's totally it. And then I also think that, again, the production design is incredible. The costuming, the hair, the colors, like visually, it's just sumptuous. It's so nice. And I think that also is part of what makes it so great to watch. It also is set in the winter, which again, for me, again, mm-hmm. this is like made for me personally, like a sort of dystopian story centered on a weird technology that involves like memory or heartbreak or grief or something else depressing set in the winter. I'm like a sucker for it. And this does all those things. But I do think that they'll like really, it's not like gritty. It's not like, you know, you're not in a war zone. It's not like you said, it's got like, there are brutalist aspects of it aesthetically, but it doesn't feel ugly. And that also just, I think, makes it feel less scary and makes it more in that uncanny, but again, still like, I find it really sort of not soothing to watch, but like, I don't know, visually they're doing something that's making my brain light up.
No, totally. So I write this Veronica Mars newsletter and I've had this whole theory going since the first issue about the colors that they choose to put different characters in. Mm-hmm. And one of them is around the color pink. And then in the last episode I was watching, there's a scene where two extras walk by in the background and mm-hmm. they're both wearing pink shirts that are the exact same shade of pink. They're slightly different. One is a V-neck and one is a V with a little collar. They're wearing the same exact shade of blue, flared blue jeans. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, the show, like, that feels like an accidental color story that's being told, and like no one noticed it. And I was like, okay, I think actually maybe the showrunner just like likes certain colors and wants to see them in the world of the show. And that is so different than Severance, where kind of like Mad Men, I would say, it, you can imagine that there's like a team of really smart, interesting people who are talking about every single piece of clothing, every single character is wearing, and every single prop. I mean, it's just so, it's so intentional, but not in a heavy-handed way where you're like, all right, I get it. Like, you have a budget to make a thing. It's just, it's so thoughtful. And it, there's something that's very like, now that I'm, now that we're talking about this, I feel like there's something really inviting about the show, even though it's like, we maybe are at the point of downplaying how much darkness there is in it. But like, it's, there are these shows that be either because they're dealing with dark subject matter or a dystopia or they're puzzle boxes. It almost feels like the creator of the show is like defying you to want to spend time in the world. And this just doesn't feel like that. This just feels like a beautiful diorama that was made, not and not in a twee, annoying Wes Anderson way where it's like, this is my diorama, but don't talk too loudly around it because it's really fragile. It's more just like, hey, this is a whole world. Come in and check it out. And boy, is it rewarding to do that.
I think that's a really good way of putting it. Like, there's something so satisfying about how every little detail is. And I've read a bunch of articles about the production design and how they made certain choices. And it's like, oh, you know that these are people who like care deeply about the exact shade of blue or green that they're using for different things. And like, just the, every choice has been made, but it feels considered, but still sort of effortless when you're watching it. It doesn't feel like, I think Wes Anderson is a good comparison of like another extreme. And this, this has the satisfying feeling of looking inside a dollhouse where you're just like, oh, everything is just so, and I love it and I want more of it, but it doesn't feel like cloying or twee. It just is, it's so perfect. So yeah, I think that really, it balances out the darkness and makes it more fun to watch. Also, it's funny. Like, there's a lot of good jokes in it, too. Like, I laughed out loud many times while watching that. So it's not all doom and gloom, but it is a drama and it is sad and dark in parts. So we shouldn't downplay that. But it, again, it's not scary.
No, no, it's not scary. I've definitely seen some people describe it as a dark comedy. And I, that wasn't how I would have described it, but I totally see where it comes from, because there are some like pretty great things.
Yes.
Here there be spoilers. Spoilers will end at timestamp 43 minutes 55 seconds. Thank you.
I kind of want to talk a little bit about like how you approach these puzzle box shows, because there's so much like theory crafting one can do. But anyway, my question for you is, do you want to like talk about some of the stuff you've read and like what you've learned from it, or like what's been interesting and what you what you've gotten that like maybe you wouldn't get from the show, but that has like added to your experience of it?
That's a great question. So I should say that this is one of the first shows in a long time that I have not read recaps immediately after. Let me take that back. I did read recaps, but I didn't go on Reddit. So I just like forgot kind of, and I was moving through it so quickly that I kind of like didn't want to waste any more time. Like, I wanted to put the next episode on, and I'm really glad that I was reading the Vulture recaps, and I think sometimes they will sort of make asides to like things that they're seeing on Reddit, like fan theories that are popping up. And for whatever reason, in this case, that didn't happen. And I'm so glad that it didn't. Like, I really do think that the finale payoff was so much better because I like just didn't see it coming. And like, I would have spoiled that for myself. And so I'm so glad that I didn't do that this time. So I think that like, the things that I've been reading, I liked the recaps because they were just giving, like, making sure I didn't miss anything or kind of keeping characters straight. Again, Vulture recaps are great for that. But I, the things that I really enjoyed are the stuff about production design and how they did specific scenes, the dance party. What's the name of it?
The mixer. Oh, Jazz, Defiant Jazz. Oh, no, the musical dance experience. Yeah.
So, like, reading about how they did the musical dance experience and the lighting and all of that. And, like, just I really enjoyed all those things. So I'm trying to think of what – if there's anything specific that was added from reading. I mean, I've enjoyed now going back and reading all the subreddit theories. And it's like, oh, yeah, I missed that. Or like, oh, yeah, people saw that coming. And oh, yeah, I did catch that. So it was kind of a mix. I think also because now we've done enough of these puzzle box shows, you kind of know a little bit more what to look for.
Yeah, true.
But I don't know if there was anything in particular that's like standing out to me as like a really strong takeaway, except that the desk that the four of them sit at cost $100,000 to build. That's the main thing I took away from all
holy shit.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That's it. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's great. That's a great thing. One thing that really sticks out to me in a show of like very intentional design choices, like we said, is Helly R's outfits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, first of all, the silhouette is like very specific. Like everything is very, like a lot of pencil skirts.
Yep.
Everything's very fitted. But then also her palette is like these kind of jewel tones.
Uh-huh.
And that feels so, when I'm watching the show, I'm like, okay, now that's significant. And I don't really know exactly how or why, but I just know it is. Did anything come up about that?
Yeah, because at the end, okay, so in the finale when Helly is talking to her father, right? She's wearing that blue and green dress. It's like really distinct. And she's got earrings that are really distinct too. And in the conversation, they're talking about how the Severance ship has like the blue and green light back then. And like I'm doing sort of a bad job of articulating this, but there I saw a bunch of stuff, and I can even link to this in the show notes if I can find the more specific. But it was basically like the blue and green that she's always wearing feels like the lumen colors, like a specific choice there. And even like the shape of the dress with the stripe feels like related to the technology
you're so
that
right.
they're making.
Yeah.
So I think that might be the thing.
Yeah. It's funny. It kind of goes back to what you said about how like with puzzle box shows, you start to know what to look for. And it's like, besides the fact that her wardrobe is just very striking in and of itself, you sort of know, you're like, all right, something's going on, because her appearance is also just so different from the rest of the aesthetic in the severed floor.
Mm-hmm. What did you think was her deal, like heading before the like last moments of the finale, when we like saw what was going to be coming? Like when we saw the shot of her in the next episode, I think it was like super clear immediately. But like pre that, what did you think her deal was going to be?
You mean before we find out that she's actually an Egan?
Yeah.
I thought she was an Egan. I should say I thought it was like a possibility, because there was that episode where I think it's like Mark is leaving and they're setting up, or someone's leaving and they're setting up for this big like gala. They're putting up a sign that says like, welcome friends of Lumen. And then you see her and she's really dolled up.
Yeah. That I think is I think that's in the last moments of the penultimate episode.
Okay. Right. Yes, exactly. I couldn't remember exactly when it was. Yeah. So then I just almost like unconsciously made that connection. And I was like, she must be, I didn't actually know if I thought she was an Egan or just like worked at Lumen, but I felt like she was definitely connected to the company in some way.
Yeah.
What about you?
But that was the first minute I knew. Like I didn't have any idea before then. And I was like, no. Oh, this is a person who's like visibly desperate to be here. That's what we know based on how her Audi is acting. So my feeling was like, is she in prison? And this is more free than that. Or is she like in some sort of mental health hospital, or is like whatever, she's escaping something by being here. That's the reason she's so desperate to stay. So that was my read, which was obviously very wrong, but that was sort of like all I could come up with.
That's really smart. I have to say, I generally, and this is like kind of one of the things I want to talk about, is that I generally don't do very much like theorizing of what's going on. I think it's one of the reasons like I haven't read that much. I remember learning, watching Game of Thrones, listening to people theorize about what was going to happen once the TV show like went in a different direction.
Books.
Yeah. Not in a different direction, right? Surpassed the books. I was like, I found myself very uninterested. And I think it's very fun to be like, what do you think could happen? But there can be with these shows sometimes this almost like gamesmanship of like trying to predict what's really happening. And
totally.
I find that to be a really frustrating way to engage. And so I tend to avoid the whole thing entirely, which means I end up not doing that much like thinking about what's going on. Because the thing is, I feel like, and I think it's really cool when people do it. And the fact that you had some kind of a theory about what could be going on with Helly is fucking really cool. And I'm like, man, that didn't even occur to me. But of course, like, I could have like turned off the TV and been like, what do I really think is going on? But I tend to not do that. It's, and I think part of it is that like, I like to, if someone is doing a magic trick, I don't want to try to figure out how they're doing it. I just want to be like wowed and be like, so magic is real.
That makes sense.
And I think that's part of it. And the other thing is just that when in sci-fi, it's like, it could be anything. Like maybe they're on an alien planet and they're, you know what I mean? They're a model in someone's alien world or something like that.
Right.
So I say all that to say, I haven't done very much theorizing about what the hell is actually going on, but a lot of people have on Reddit.
Yeah, they have. So I think part of the reason I didn't in this case is because the whole season was out when I watched it, which made a massive difference. If I was waiting a week between episodes, I absolutely would have been on Reddit reading about it, because when I really like something, I want to keep up, like I want to fill my time. I'm thinking about it when I'm not watching it and I want to watch it. I want more. So I like can't help myself, but I'm glad that I didn't in this case. It'll be a lot harder for season two when I'm watching it in real time. But I think that that gamesmanship you talked about is very real. That definitely happened when watching Yellow Jackets. Yeah. And like, I think I watched the first maybe six or seven episodes before they aired. So, or like, I think that I watched like the first six or seven episodes as a binge and then was caught up and was watching in real time. And so I don't think I went on Reddit at that point because I didn't want to like accidentally spoil anything. And the theories were so outrageous. And it was like, oh, everyone has brain worms from these puzzle box shows. Like they're theorizing about things that like that just didn't happen. Like this person is not, you know, secretly somebody's dead baby. Like that didn't happen, you know? Yeah. And it just like, it kind of became a meme on the Yellow Jacket subreddit because people were continuing to say like, I think this person is really that person. And it just got so ridiculous. But like, even after the finale was done and the showrunners were like, this is done, people were still theorizing of like, is this person really dead or not? And it's just like, they are. Like we all saw them, they're dead. This is not, like, just let's time to move on, guys. And I think that sort of paranoia that puzzle boxes create where you think everything is fake is not the most fun. And it's like particularly off-putting when you're seeing it in other people you don't know. It's just like, oh my God, get a grip. Like this is ridiculous. So that was definitely happening with this show too. I saw that kind of stuff later and some of it turned out to be correct, but not necessarily for the reasons they thought. And so it was definitely kind of just like, again, a little bit of like, get a grip, you guys. This is too much theorizing.
Yeah. And sometimes I see that stuff. Like one of the reasons that I scan the subreddit, but I don't click on a ton of stuff in there is because some of it, I'm just like, I hope that's not what this is. That would be terrible.
I know. Like, I totally agree.
I will say that we started watching it after a few episodes were out. So it was only maybe the last like three episodes that we were like waiting for Thursday night or Friday for them to come out. And pretty much right after, in the week between the second to last episode and the last episode coming out, I rewatched all of them in like a matter of 3 days.
I can see why. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was like, I'm sure I missed a ton of stuff. I would love to notice more things. And I did notice more things. Like you notice more details that, again, are like, you're like, oh, that's probably like hinting at something about the world. That's probably not just like a random detail. And in doing that, there was one thing that I still really couldn't understand. And I'm saying all this to say, there's a link I want to share, which I found on Reddit. And it's the scene where on Helly's first day, where she keeps trying to escape. I couldn't really understand what was happening. First of all, it's very early in the show, so you kind of don't know what's going on generally. But someone on Reddit cut it together in one continuous scene, so you can see the entire thing with the cuts back and forth making sense of it.
So you're seeing it from both sides is what I'm understanding. Like, because you see it in early on, you see her as the innie trying to leave. Later, you get a glimpse of the outie going back in. And it is incredibly confusing when you get that because you're just like, is this the outie and why am I seeing it? What is that? It's super confusing at the time.
Yeah, it's really confusing. And the edit makes it really clear. And I have to say, it also makes this one line so much more powerful, which was already like an amazing line. But do you remember when Helly, during one of the times she runs through the door, she says to Mr. Milchick, she's like, God, I really don't want to be in there, do I? And he goes, you're learning that you do. And it's like such a fucking potent. I think also if you have worked for like a big corporation, some of the weird like mind fuckery that goes on at Lumen really hits home. Once I watched the continuous edit, that was even more powerful because you're seeing, I don't know, it's like actually it feels like an MC Escher print to even try to like talk about it because of the innie and the outie thing happening. But you just, when you see the continuous edit, you get a much more complete sense of like Helly's like inner landscape. And it makes that one line like super powerful. We will link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, I think that kind of stuff is great. I would like to go back and watch it again because I just think I feel this way about a lot of stuff and like some of the things we're going to talk about in a minute of the other media. I feel like the first time you watch, you just spend so much time trying to kind of figure out what's going on. That's less the case in this than other related media. But I do think that like you're so kind of like, what's this? What's that? That you just like simply can't notice certain things unless they like really draw your attention to it. And so there are a lot of things that like you're not going to pick up on that do have so much more significance later on. And so I think that things in this genre tend to be the kind of things that I rewatch because it's just like you kind of need to fully get it.
Yeah, man, you totally do. And there are some like incredibly observant viewers out there who are noticing shit that never would have occurred to me.
Sometimes I'm just like, is this like somebody associated with the show like planting this? Because like, how are you noticing this? How did you notice? Like one thing that I saw is that there are no numbers within Lumen except on the computer screens. Whoa. So like one of the things that Mark does when he gets into work is he changes his watch out for one that doesn't have numbers on the face. And then the clocks on the wall also don't have numbers on the face. And I'm just like, who notices that and like figures out why that would be? Like that is just so specific to me that I'm just like, God, what's going on in your head? Like, it's just, you're on a different level.
Someone pointed out on Reddit that the keyboards at Lumen don't have an escape key, which is kind of
specific.
It's like a similar detail. We're like, oh yeah. And I feel like a lot of these things will end up having been clues. And then a lot of these things will just end up being world building details that don't necessarily like illuminate some of the shit about Lumen, you know?
Also, on the note of the keyboards, one of the things I read when I was reading about the production design is like the work they went through to design the computer consoles because they wanted them to feel like basically like divorced from the modern era because they wanted it to be clear of like, this is not connected to an internet. They can't Google things.
Right.
So they needed to go back to, you know, the 80s, but then they also didn't want it to look like something recognizable from the 80s. So I think that they said they brought in all these different like vintage, different monitors and models. And I think they ultimately just built their own to kind of pick and choose the little details from this one and that one to kind of
cool.
pop this whole like system. But as for like what the hell they're doing on those computers, could be anything. Like part of me thinks we're going to find out that it's not actually the most diabolical shit, but in fact that like it's the most ridiculous shit. And it's like, oh, you ruined people's lives to do something that is like so stupid and boring. Like that would be a real kick in the head. But the other part of me is like, they're murdering people, obviously.
Yeah, I know. Part of me is like, oh, they mean nothing. Like the innies are part of some kind of experiment, some sort of behavioral experiment. And then another part of me is like, oh no, it's totally an actual thing and it's tied to something very real. Mm-hmm. One other thing I just wanted to say that when this was revealed in the show, I was like so psyched, is that there's this weird kind of cultish aspect around Keir Egan and the aesthetic of the Egan family, this whole kind of like frontiersman, you know, bootstrap Protestant work ethic thing is such a delightful aesthetic. And the fact that it has kind of a cult vibe. I just, again, like just in terms of like a thing being made just for you, I was like, yeah, man,
I liked that aspect a lot. That's one episode I would go back to watch with like all the different founders, because I think there's a lot of little things there that I probably missed. But I think the way that they are taking this sort of like the way that currently tech founders are seen as like these cult-like figures and these geniuses, I think is also really clever, that it's both like culty in a way that feels like very like historically American in so many ways, but it also feels very of this moment. And I think it does a really good job of blending the things that feel very old-fashioned and very sort of timeless with things that feel like a specific commentary on like life right now.
Yes, that's so true.
Like all the little work perks and like how useless they are really feels like very relevant to modern times. And
100%. Yeah, I was thinking about like the companies I've worked for where it's like unlimited kind bars and you're like, I have to pay rent, you know, like that kind of thing. Yeah, it's very good commentary without being like so on the head that you're like, we get it, work is hell. I feel like Adam Scott's physical transformation is on par with Charlize Theron in Monster. Like, I don't know how you feel about Adam Scott as a hunk, Rachel, but like he, and you know, he sometimes plays these sort of cute but dorky dudes.
Yeah.
But like the man, you know, he'll do a photo shoot where he's just downright smoldering. I'm actually going to make you look at the photos now. Or, you know, he played, you know, he had that beard and Big Little Lies.
Oh, right. I forgot that he was in that.
Like, the dude is like, he can legitimately be a hunk when he wants to be. And he looks so incredibly, like, wan and pale and limp in this way. Like, the transformation, I just think, is like, it feels like a marvel to me. I don't know. Where do you stand on his hunkiness generally?
Yeah, I would never call him hot.
Yeah.
Personally.
Okay. Sure.
Because he's like adjacent to my type, but he's not it. But God, he looks so much better in all the pictures I'm looking at than he looks on this show. They make him look schlubby and depressed, and he's got weird hair. I was wondering much of the time if he was wearing a wig, like what's going on with the hair. He does not look great.
He doesn't. Yeah, he is like, he looks almost like waxy. I mean, you know, he looks like someone who's never seen the sun. Like, yeah. I just mean like not in terms of being pale, but in the pallor that you have when you live in an office, essentially.
Yeah.
Did you just see the hunky picture I sent you?
That's like maybe the best he's ever looked.
But what I'm saying is I could not.
But he's also tan there. So yeah, the difference between him. Yeah. On the show,
I mean,
and
it's
him.
Like, yeah, you can like give me a makeover and make me look better than I look on a day to day, but I'm never going to, this feels like a whole other level. And just, I don't know. I'm taken with what this show has done to him physically.
I agree. Yeah. I think you're right. And also the transformation between him as an outie and an innie is also really remarkable.
100%. The other thing I want to mention is that I think like the show is full of really good acting, like from top to bottom, but I'm completely beguiled by Patricia Arquette's performance. I just think that it's really fucking good. And
it's just really
like,
good.
I'm like, okay, Patricia Arquette, like you're doing it, you know?
She's really good in it.
So good.
I think this is kind of my first interaction with her in a movie or TV show. And I'm like, oh yeah, I see what all of the fuss is about. She's really good in it.
Yeah, she's really good. But I think everyone's really good. I think this is one of those shows where I don't even know. It's hard to think of a weak link, you know?
Yeah. Acting-wise. I want to mention Mr. Milchick is like the highlight for me. He is so good every bit. Like he's so moisturized and perfect. Like he just physically, the way he embodies the role is so perfect and spot on. And the acting is great. He's such a perfect slime ball and company man in this way that is like, he's so unctuous. And I wanted more of him, but again, everything was perfect. I wouldn't change a thing, but man, what's his deal?
Yeah. Mr. Milchick. You're so right. What he's doing physically, just in terms of how he is being in his body, it's completely mesmerizing. And also with Mr. Milchick, I feel like I'm like, wow, what character are you? Like, I haven't seen, like, you know, like we've seen like the Irv character type. Mm-hmm. We've seen like all of the four innies. There's a rebellious one. There's one who's like towing the line, but is ambivalent. There's one who's kind of rebellious. Mr. Milchick, I'm just like, you're new. You're a new archetype.
He's like yes, I think you're totally right. I think he's singular in this way. And he's great. He's one of the best parts of the show.
Totally, totally agree.
Spoilers have ended. Please enjoy the rest of the show.
Now that we've like gushed, let's talk about some Severance like media. I have a bunch of like podcasts and some TV shows. You also have some movies and books and stuff. So you want to kick us off?
Yeah. So the first thing that I was reminded of was Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which came out back in 2004, but I actually recently rewatched. So it was top of mind. And again, the themes are very similar. It's about like the things we do to forget people. And like it's sort of the technology at the heart of it is similar in that that movie is about a technology that allows you to erase an entire person from your brain. So people use it after breakups to like forget that this person ever happened. You don't recognize them if you see them in public. Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet are in it. And it's set in the winter and around Valentine's Day, which is my favorite time of year. And it just is like sad and sweet and funny and weird. And yeah, I think it like really captured, like to me, this is one of the most similar things. And I think similarly when I was rewatching it like a month or two ago, I just remember how sort of it like it feels like somebody putting a blanket over you to watch it. Like it's got a very cozy feeling, even though it's sad and dark. And this has a similar, it's like the aesthetic of it that makes you feel kind of soothed even as it's still a bummer.
Mm-hmm. You're kind of reminding me or making me think of the thing about winter that's really interesting about Severance is that it's cold in this winter and it's dreary, but it's never the holidays. Like it's not about that. It's not. Mm-mm. And I remember, I haven't seen Eternal Sunshine in ages, but I remember that they take the train to some beach or whatever. And it feels like it's that part of the winter that feels sort of endless where it's like post-holidays before spring. And that's a very, like for anyone who's like, I guess this is a very like Northeastern and Midwestern centric point of view, but it's a very specific time of year where it's you're in this like liminal space and that has a very specific feeling to it.
Yeah. And I think there's also something about snow, both like aesthetically what it does, but also sonically, like the way that snow like mutes sound. And I think both of these have this like quietness to them that really comes through that like it does have this sort of soft and quiet feel versus other dystopian things that feel like really aggressive and you're on edge the whole time. That's not how these are.
That's such a good call. Yeah, that's great. That's such a good comparison.
All right. What's your first comparative, like further reading or watching or listening to?
I'm just going to mention three podcasts really quick. We'll link to all of these in the show notes. The first one is called The Program, and it is set in a future in which money, state, and God become fused into a single entity called The Program. And each episode is a self-contained story focusing on ordinary people inhabiting this extraordinary world. And for them, it is not the future that is terrifying. It is our present. That's like the show description from Apple Podcasts.
Okay.
The Program, every episode, it's like just everyday people who have who live in the world of The Program talking about their lives. And there are these like researchers or maybe reporters who are interviewing these people almost in the way of doing like an oral history. It's a very interesting take on a very specific kind of dystopia where the people in the dystopia, I just realized I'm calling it a dystopia, but I don't know if it is, but that's kind of the thing about it. It feels very dystopian to us, but to them it doesn't. It feels great.
Oh, okay.
It's really cool. And you can kind of pick up with any episode because each one is self-contained. The next one is called The Deca Tapes. And this is much more of a mystery. It's much more of a puzzle box where you really don't totally know what the fuck is going on until the very end, but you get enough as you listen to want to keep going. But it's like a found footage type of thing where there are these tapes that are discovered that are these people living in this space together for some reason, cataloging their lives and what happens in their lives. Very compelling. And then the last one is called Soft Voice, which is like, I would say, the most explicitly Black Mirror of all these. And it's about this woman who has a voice in her head who tells her what to do. She calls it Soft Voice, and it tells her what to do and how to live her life and, you know, how to do all these things the absolutely correct way so she feels good all the time. And then one day Soft Voice isn't there. And that is also awesome. The description of it is that's an immersive audio drama about imposter syndrome, perfectionism, and self-loathing. But it's like way better than you would be led to think by those three words together. It's really good.
Wow.
So yeah, those are my podcasts. Rachel, what is your next thing?
Okay, my next one is a book called The Memory Police. The first line is a haunting Orwellian novel about the terrors of state surveillance. However, I'm going to keep reading and I I don't actually think that's like the best description of it. So it says, on an unnamed island, objects are disappearing. First hats, then ribbons, birds, and roses. Most of the inhabitants are oblivious to these changes, while those few able to recall the lost objects live in fear of the draconian memory police, who are committed to ensuring that what has disappeared remains forgotten. When a young writer discovers that her editor is in danger, she concocts a plan to hide him beneath her floorboards, and together they cling to her writing as the last way of preserving the past. Powerful and provocative, The Memory Police is a stunning novel about the trauma of loss. So given the name and like that first line, I was like on edge while reading it. Like, this is going to be, you know, like the secret police are coming. This is going to be really dark and horrible. And I don't want to spoil anything, but like what is unfolding ultimately is a lot less intense. It's more about like aging and grief and that kind of loss and the way that we forget people and things versus like we're forcibly removing, you know, memories from you. So it does both things, but I think it ended up being a lot more gentle and lovely than I expected, and just is sort of this like, it's very mellow ultimately, while still being very, very compelling and also sad. So I think it's a good one. A lot of these are really good to read if you or read, listen to, watch if you are in sort of a sad place, if you're going through a rough time, if you're heartbroken. And I think this one is definitely, I would recommend to the grieving.
Nice. I'm definitely going to read that. That's going to be my next stop. That sounds awesome.
Cool. What's next on your list?
So one thing that we should definitely mention is the Lexington Letter, which was put out by Apple TV Plus, and it's a supplement kind of to the show, and it's considered canon. And it's, you just Google Lexington Letter. It's a really fun, quick read. But then I wanted to mention two TV shows. One is called Humans, which I definitely think you should watch, Rachel. It's on Amazon Prime. It's an English show that I think is a remake of a Swedish show. And it's the one question that's been answered a zillion times by science fiction is what if androids? However, I personally never get tired of that question being answered. And I think Humans does a really, really good, satisfying, interesting job of asking that question and then all of the questions that kind of flow from that initial one. Tonally, it is not like Severance, but it gets at questions of humanity and memory and who we are and what does it even mean to be a person in ways that I think Severance does also. And there's just some just beautiful relationships in it. And then it's great. It's delightful. I think there's only one season. One or maybe two. I don't think that many people have seen it because every time I mention it, people are like, I've never heard of it. And I think more people should have seen it. All of you should have seen this already. I'm just kidding, but you should definitely watch it. Another show that I wanted to mention is the show Dollhouse, which is sadly a Joss Whedon joint. It does have an actor who is in Severance, Deechan Lachman, who plays Miss Casey. Is that her name?
Yeah.
The wellness. She's in Dollhouse. I'm not going to sit here, Rachel, and tell you that it's a great show. It is starring Eliza Dushku and some other. It's not a great show. The conceit of it, however, is really interesting. It's about a corporation where that basically programs people to be dolls, they're called, who get hired to do very specific things for wealthy clients. Sometimes heists and like assassinations, sometimes for sex. And it's kind of about the dolls, kind of, it's like asking the question like in a much less artful way than the other things we've talked about now, but a way that's like kind of fun and worth watching. Like, you know, what if they were to become aware of who they are?
Gotcha.
Which they don't have. And it's just like, it's a fun, it's like, if you want that version of this content, but the network TV version by Joss Whedon, then this is that. And
interesting.
Tonally much more similar to Severance.
Gotcha.
That is pretty much it for me. Rachel, what else do you have?
Well, as we've talked about many times, like Black Mirror comes to mind. And I think with Black Mirror, the thing is like, if you haven't seen it, it's an anthology. So every episode is different. Like they're self-contained, kind of like the Twilight Zone. And so I think whenever I'm recommending Black Mirror to people, I always am like, watch these specific episodes or not these, or like, these are the mood of these. So I like have some specific episodes that I think are very similar to Severance. The first one is The Entire History of You, which is probably my favorite episode of Black Mirror, which is about, again, like what if you could like scroll through all of your memories the way you scroll through pictures on your phone and like could see them and other people could see them too if you gave them access. So I think that's like very relevant. And again, it touches on like grief and breakups and things like that. So Be Right Back is another episode of Black Mirror that is sort of like the sad girl collection, I feel like, which is about like, what if they could use all of your social media postings and other things that you've done to like make a realistic Android of you after you die? Again, like a lot of overlap. It's got that like sort of sad tone that I think is really similar. And White Christmas, which is another one of my favorite episodes, which is the one with John Hamm. That episode's in three parts and some are more fucked up than others. But I think that like, again, the stretch of like you can sort of like block people from your life so that when you see them, they're just like a grayed out fuzz. Like you would block somebody on, you know, Twitter or Facebook. Like you cannot interact with them. They can't interact with you. Feels very similar. So those three are like my strongest ones. But then also San Junipero, obviously we've talked about a bunch that hits on this like romance. Hang the DJ, which is a later episode of Black Mirror, which is a little bit of a lighter one that involves dating, but is more sweet and upbeat. And Nosedive is similarly like a more sweet and upbeat one because a lot of Black Mirror is like stressful and these feel like a little bit more of the lighter episodes, but still like just similar tonally, aesthetically. And then 15 Million Merits, which is about like work and fame, I think, and the way we like get ahead. So there's a lot of overlap there.
Yeah, totally. I endorse all of those strongly. These are also my favorite episodes. They're probably also like I had a friend curate a watch list for me of Black Mirror that was like the non-scary episodes.
Yeah.
And these also would fit on that.
Completely.
On that list. Yeah. These are, I'm definitely going to rewatch these episodes now that we've talked about them because I was like looking back and I was like, oh man, a Tyler Hershey review. Kind of don't remember that. But for sure, like so many similarities in terms of like just asking those questions that are like, what if, but not like, what if we were like actually all secretly alien. It's like not that. It's like, what if this one technological thing was like a little bit more advanced than it actually is now?
And it's like, and it's suggesting people use it in ways that feel very human. Like, of course, if you could like erase memories, like this is what you would do. Like, of course, this is how it would get used and abused. And so I think that those are the most interesting. They're the ones that are like not concerned with like, you know, who's going to take over the world using this, but just like, how would people use this in their personal lives and what would that feel like? And I think that's kind of what all these recs are getting at.
Totally. Yeah, that's a really good, that's totally the through line. That's a really good call. Okay, cool. I think, is that it?
That's it.
Okay, sweet. If you've seen Severance and you want to talk about it or any of these, any of this other media that, you know, reminds you of Severance that you want to recommend, you know, to listeners, like definitely write in and let us know. Cause I think we would both be delighted to talk more about all this shit.
Definitely. And we're going to have lots of links in the show notes to articles, related media, but would be happy to share more if people have good suggestions.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so that's it then. This has been a longy but goody. Rachel, what is your nice thing to end on?
My nice thing to end on is that I am nurturing pepper seedlings that somebody in our building donated. They like posted on the message board, the only good post on the message board in the history of this building. And it was like, I accidentally planted too many peppers and now I have seedlings that I'm giving away. And so I got some. I've been nurturing them. I think I got five. Three have not made it. I don't know exactly why, but two are going strong. And so yesterday I went to gardeners.com and ordered like a big pot for outside so that I can soon transfer them and we'll have peppers. Also, I don't exactly know what kind they're going to be. The person who was giving them away was like, there's bell peppers and maybe some chili peppers, but like, I don't know which are which. So just take whatever. And so it's going to be a mystery. The puzzle box is my pepper plants, which hopefully will survive and be thriving out on our little balcony soon.
That's so awesome. That is a very nice thing to end on. And I love this puzzle box.
I'm really excited. What's yours?
Mine is I got together with my friends that every other Sunday we play a tabletop role-playing game. And we haven't played in a while, in part because I don't even know why we haven't. I guess like scheduling stuff. But we had been playing on Zoom due to the pandemic, but we got to play in person because we sat outside and the weather was like really nice. It was really sunny and I miss these people so much. And sitting there with them and just like catching up and shooting the shit and having a nice time, you know, hanging out with friends was always great. But like during the pandemic, when it feels harder to make that happen, oh my God, is it great. And this is a group of people who we have a very, I don't know, Rachel, have you had this experience during the pandemic when you're trying to make plans with someone and you're like, oh man, is it going to be weird if I'm like, hey, we're kind of like not cool with doing this thing COVID-wise? Mm-hmm. Would it be cool? And it's just like, it feels awkward and everyone's, yeah. you're worried about being judged and you want people to think you're judging them. This group of people, and there's like five or six of us, are so transparent and kind and respectful, where there's like a text chain and it's like, hey, like what, like I went to this thing and there was a kid who was too young to be vaccinated there. And, you know, like these are the exact conditions of that hangout and how long it was and whether there was airflow. Like, do you all feel yeah. comfortable hanging out, or, you know, let's all test beforehand. And if it's cool, I'm not going to be hugging, like just like mm-hmm. so much disclosing about like what people have been doing. And then just like so much like, hey, like I did this thing, if folks aren't cool with it, like I totally, and it's never like I went to a
right
you know huge indoor
right
thing, but it's right. just like, you know, everyone just like checking on everyone's like boundaries and making sure everyone feels like good and comfy and as understanding. And it's just, it's a very like unjudgmental space, and it also feels really safe, and I just love it so much. And it was just so nice in the zillionth month of the pandemic, after so many experiences of feeling sort of alienated from people, both because I haven't seen them in a long time and because I feel like people are living way different lives than me, and sometimes yeah. lives where there's like 15 question marks floating over my head about the choices yeah. they're making. It was just very nice to connect with people and just feel really good about it. So that's my nice thing to end on.
That is so nice. That is, I think, a great reminder as we head into summer. I'm so excited to start seeing people more outside. I hung out with a friend yesterday and it was super, super life affirming. And I'm just excited. The weather has been iffy here, so it's been hard. But like, it's also good to remember that just lots of people are still taking this seriously, still doing this, still want to have these conversations. And you're not weird or a freak if you are still being cautious. And there's other people like you who are going to be willing to meet you where you are and do the same things. And that's great.
Hell yes. That is the nicest thing to end on. So thank you for listening to this episode of Oh, I Like That. Please rate us and review us.
You can follow us on Twitter at Oh, I Like That Pod, or email us at ohilikethatpod@gmail.com. You can also follow the two of us. I'm the_REWM and Sally is at Sally T.
Oh, I Like That is produced by Rachel and Sally and edited by Lucas. Amber Seeger, who is Rocket Orca on social media, designed our logo.